Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and if you're like me, located in an area where winter is really showing his stuff, well, it's a time to cozy in, get comfortable, and to just enjoy this next hour. We are going to be traveling via the airwaves of technology to an area that I live in, and that's the Pacific Northwest. My guest today, Karen King, is a woman that I had the opportunity to chat with for a few minutes at a book expo that was held in the Seattle-Tacoma area about a month or so ago. And her book is titled The San Juan Islands and Beyond. It's a photographer's journey, and I sure wish I could give you the visual because her photography is just beautiful. But I want to welcome Karen to the show. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Donna. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I was so impressed with your photography when I met you at the book expo that was in the Seattle-Tacoma area. Now, you have a real passion for photography, but my question to you is, what is it that really triggered this? You have a particular perspective that you try to gather when you're doing your work, and I think every photographer sort of has a signature, just like every writer has a signature style. When did you fall in love with the magic of the visual image?
Well, that happened when I was about 8 years old with my first Brownie camera. I was given that when I was just a child, and I enjoyed that as a hobby. And in my 20s, I went on to actually exhibit some of my photography. And my love of the ocean, I blended my love of the ocean with my photography. And that's when it started, and it continued for a while. And about 5 years ago, something, pardon the pun, snapped, where I decided to pick up my camera again and see the beauty of the Northwest through the lens of my camera. And the Northwest, to me, is the most beautiful place on Earth. And when we were flying over, when we came in here in 1989, I remember looking down and seeing all the water and all the opportunities that lay before me for my photography work. But I didn't really start focusing closely on it until about 5 years ago.
Now, with this, as I said, there's sort of a signature style that you have, and you're mentioning that when you flew in 1989, you just had this overwhelming connection with the area because you love water. And I think a lot of people that live in the Pacific Northwest identify with it. I mean, I am a mountains, water, and green tree type of gal. And the Pacific Northwest affords all of that. And it is absolutely awesome. And there is so much diversity here that you would not necessarily expect because you get locked into certain paradigms. And your camera captures a lot of this diversity. One of the components that I just thought was absolutely phenomenal was your photography of the orcas. Now, of course, we have Orcas Island here. When did your love affair with the orcas begin, and what time of the year do you go out to photograph them?
Well, the orcas, my fascination with the orcas began probably when we moved here, because I'd never seen anything like it. And they're so dressed up. They look like they're wearing a tuxedo. There's humpback whales, there's gray whales, there's blue whales. But the orcas, I feel a connection to them. And when I'm able to, when they present themselves to me and I'm able to photograph them, it's an experience that is difficult to describe in words, because the feeling is almost palpable. As if you're part of their family, they're welcoming you in to their family. They're allowing you to view them. And it took quite a while before I actually saw one breach, and then Spy Hop and Tail Slap and Speed Swim. It took quite a while before I started to understand what the patterns are. And when I first saw them, it was in June. And they have, I don't want to say they have a schedule, but they do come into the area, the resident orcas. They do start circling the islands in the May, June, July, August, September, October. They're still seen throughout the islands, but rarely in the winter months. But if you go in the spring, when there are three pods, the JK and L resident, they meet up, and that's when they get excited to see each other. They jump out of the water, and they do all these other kinds of behavior that you see that I have in the book. And it's rare to capture that, because they are fairly unpredictable. And when they jump out of the water, you hear a push, and you turn your camera to look for it, and you see a big splash. So I have thousands and thousands of big orca splashes. But of course, it took quite a few pictures to get some of the images that you see in the book.
And yes, and they really are dramatic. They just are absolutely, absolutely captivating. You've got an image of a whale blow where there's two orcas side by side. You have the spy hopping, as it's called, and breaching. You made a statement that I thought was a fascinating one, and that is that it's so personal. When you are out photographing them, and you said when they allow you to see them, and I have heard this statement made by other people, and having had the opportunity to be part of a whale watching group at one time, and being on an Alaskan cruise where there was a pod of whales there, they weren't the orcas, but where there was a pod of whales that were bringing their babies, the mamas were bringing their babies up into Alaskan waters, and they hadn't seen them for years. It really is quite an emotional connection, and I can relate to what you're saying, and I don't know that everybody feels that, but when you see this demonstration of this phenomenal mammal doing its action in front of you, I think your statement is quite a powerful one, because many times among the native cultures, they will say that. They'll say the animals will give you the gift. If you're willing to accept it on their terms, they will come to you. They will let you know that you have the privilege of entering into their space. And I think your words are very well stated relative to this. And I find that people, when they're out in the wild like that, this is something that they'll often say. It's so difficult to describe it, but I was given the opportunity. And that's what I think is reflected through so much of your photography. Now, Orcas Island obviously got the name because of the orcas being there. Is that where you got a great many of these phenomenal photographs of these magnificent animals?
Well, one of the things in my book is I have a map that shows you exactly where I took the photographs. And Orcas Island, I don't know if it's been named because of the orcas or because of the shape of the island, may look like an orca. But a lot of the images were taken in Rosario Strait and Haro Strait, and they do circle around the islands and those around the perimeter mostly. And when they do go up north, I did catch some of them, up north. There's a 2-page spread on the breaching, with a sailboat in the picture. Those were taken north of Orcas Island. And it really is a privilege to be in their presence. And when they do, like you said, when they do present themselves, It is a gift. And one of the things I try to show in my images, and like you say, my signature style, is the drama of the Northwest. When you look at my sunsets, they're dramatic. And the wildlife, I try to catch the drama of them. And there's a definite feel to the pictures that are in the book. And it gives you you're not just looking at a picture. And I think that's what the response I've been getting from people who look at the book is they say, this isn't just a picture. I'm getting a feeling about this space, this place, this animal, this sunset, this time of year. And that's what I think makes my photography stand out that's different from others, is that you actually get a feeling connected to the image.
The Pacific Northwest is never a quiet place in a true sense. Nature is always on the go. She's always got drama happening on one level or another. And I guess that could be said for just about everywhere. But you can go into places like Yellowstone, and during the winter, you're not going to see a heck of a lot of movement. You might see a wildcat every once in a while, or you might see the buffalo. But really, it's pretty quiet. You know, and the elk are pretty quiet. But here in the Pacific Northwest, we have the seals, we have all kinds of critters, and I think it's because we are somewhat more temperate than other areas. But you have Popeye, the seal. Now, you say he's a resident seal. Where does Popeye live? And he is quite a character, and you've caught him.
Well,
you've captured him. Who is he? How did he get his name? And where is he?
Popeye, we found out, is a girl. And they named her probably before they knew that, and many, many years ago. And Popeye lives in the area of Friday Harbor Marina. And the way they found out she was a girl is one spring she had pups with her. And
that's
when they knew she
Woo-hoo.
Was a girl. And she hangs out in the marina. There's a fish market in the marina. And they feed her from time to time. And in the summertime, when we have a boat, and when we're in the marina and the barbecues come out in the late afternoon, early evening, you see her foraging, going from boat to boat and wondering if someone's going to throw her a fish. And if you look at the picture that's side by side, one is with her looking straight at me and the other one is her giving us a big splash. She's demanding a fish. And we don't feed wildlife. We never feed her. But others do. They will feed her a fish. And so she doesn't know which boats are going to feed her. So the ones that don't, we get a big splash from her. And I think the way she got her name Popeye is one of her eyes is a little clouded over. And so it gives her a unique look. But she's a big character in Friday Harbor on San Juan Island.
Amazing. Just amazing. You also have a photo of a river otter up on a marina, you know, an old marina section. The wood is quite old, very weathered. And I thought to myself, my goodness, this is unusual, isn't it, for a river otter to be up in a place that would be so public with people, because to the best of my awareness, they don't seek people out. They're usually moving all the time and constantly on the go. They're very playful, and they're pretty big animals. How did you manage to get this one? Was this just a lucky day?
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing, is this took 4 years to put together. So 4 years of being out there constantly, all different kinds of weather and times of the year. And sometimes, that's why the name of my company is photoshappen.com. So it's the photos happen. And this was, just as you say, an opportunity that presented itself. And, of course, I had my camera prepared. And when he gave me that look that you see in the picture, that look as soon as I got that look, I backed down because I don't disturb the wildlife. And I thought he might have been frightened. But, yes, they do hang out in Friday Harbor, in Anacortes, Port Townsend. They're on the docks constantly. But they don't approach people. Mm-hmm. If they're in an area, they go away from people. But sometimes you get to see them going on the docks, and you see them from afar. So that was taken with a zoom lens, and that's why. But he looks close, but he's not.
Right, and you have another photograph of an otter. You say he's smiling. And I looked at this, and I said, goodness, that reminds me of my Scottish Terrier's look at certain times that he gets. It look in his eyes like, aha, I gotcha. Yahoo! Surprise!
That's a harbor seal that has graced us on our dock in Anacortes from time to time. And this was in the winter time, actually, because you rarely see them on docks when there's people around. I've since not seen one on a dock, and that was 3 years ago when I got that shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, the otter that I was talking about is in water, and it's by a rock, and you've captured this personality that I'm looking at that, like I said, it reminds me of my Scotty. But your work, I was surprised to find out that puffins, which I knew were up in the far north, and they're very migratory birds, I had no idea they were here in the Pacific Northwest and that they would show up in the San Juan Islands. I mean, this was quite a revelation to me.
They're rarely seen in the San Juan Islands, and they are far north, almost into Canada. Mm-hmm. And they are rare to find, very rare. But they're not in I've never seen one in the San Juan Islands, per se. It's north of the San Juan Islands, which would be past Stewart. And if you're looking at there's a map in the book, past Susha Island, but below the Canadian border. But it is very rare to find them there.
And then you have photographs of the mallards, which you see a lot of them here in the Pacific Northwest. We have Canadian geese, but we have so many species of birds that often we're not even aware of. And I was visiting with a friend yesterday who is an avid bird watcher. He sits in his living room, and he lives on the edge of a golf course, and he has his handy-dandy binoculars and his bird book, and he keeps records on what he sees. He told me in his backyard he's seen 20 different species of bird. Now, that's bird, but ducks, he's not near any water areas, and you've got an eider duck, which is an incredibly gorgeous, gorgeous bird. I mean, the markings looks like soft blue, purple, green, yellow, red. I mean, this is mallards are gorgeous anyway, especially the males. But my goodness, I didn't know anything about this eider bird. How many species of ducks do we have here in the Pacific Northwest?
I really don't know. I do have one of the eiders in my book, which is rare to find. But I don't know how many species, but and I'd never been really interested in photographing birds until I saw the great blue heron. And when I saw that, I thought, how spectacular is that? But the birds that I have in the book are the great blue herons and, of course, the mallard in the spring with the water background and the eagles. But we have such a rich area for wildlife in this area, in the Great Northwest here. But I'm not sure about how many. I'm not a bird expert, so I don't exactly know.
Now, you've done quite a bit of aerial photography. For those of you that are listening, they're in other parts of the country and or the world. The Pacific Northwest has so many islands. It has these waterways. And when you're flying over it, it's almost magical because of the lushness of the green and the environments that you see below you. And sometimes you wonder, how is it that people get from point A to point B? Well, many times on these islands, the only way you can get from point A to point B, if there's not a bridge, which for many of them there's not, it's by ferry. And there are people that will live in certain areas, and they take these ferries into Seattle or into certain dockings where they can then travel or commute to wherever they want to go. And I think your photography, especially of the time of the year, like late spring and summer, when boating really gets to be popular, and you show the aerial views of this. This must have been quite an interesting experience. Do you have a buddy that likes to fly and you say, hey, take me up when you're ready to go?
Well, you know, the first time I was asked to do some aerial photography, it was for a person who had put a book together that had drawings of the marinas. And he asked me to get photographs of all the marinas in from Olympia to Bellingham. And so I said, okay, I can do that. And I do have a friend, his name is Dr. Dieter Zube, and he has a plane, and when the weather is good and he's able to fly, we go up. And I have become so enamored with aerial photography that, and you're going to be the first to hear this, that my next book is going to be Above and Beyond, that's what it's going to be called, of the Washington coastline and beyond. Mm-hmm. So the pictures you see are some that I thought were quite striking, because every time I go up to do an aerial shoot, I come back with about 450 images. So it's difficult to pick which ones I think should go in the book by the time I get down from the air. But I'm also going to be working with a helicopter pilot right now in Friday Harbor, and we're getting up close and personal, even closer than what you see here. And the aerial photography is quite spectacular. I've had people who have been boaters in the area for quite some time, look at the photograph and they say, oh, that's where we're going from place to place, because it doesn't look the same from the air as it does from the water.
Absolutely true. Now I want to ask you a question.
I see
people with cameras when they're in planes, the commercial planes, and they're taking photos through the window, and I look at it and I go, my goodness, that window is so scratched. How in the world do you expect to get a good picture? When you're in a small plane and you're flying around with your friend, or when you are in a helicopter where you're taking this, how do you keep your camera stable so you don't have all of this wiggle-waggle stuff that makes it impossible to even see what you took a picture of?
Well, first of all, I don't shoot through a window, and the window is basically out in the airplane. We fly in a Cessna 182, mm-hmm. and it's a fixed high wing, so I can shoot below without any obstruction. And the window, he unscrews the window, and it's up and out of my vision. When I fly in a helicopter, we fly with the door off, completely off. And there is quite a vibration. My camera has what's called a VR, a vibration reduction mm-hmm. feature that helps with that. So without that, I think it might be a little bit more difficult, but I think it's still possible, because there are times that I've flown and forgot to switch it on, mm-hmm. and I still get some pretty good pictures.
That's amazing to me, because of the vibrational frequency of a plane, and having been in smaller planes, been in planes with bush pilots, et cetera, they are not stable flyers. I mean, it's just, you have the turbulence, you bump, you burp. You go through all kinds of stuff. And I just go, how did you do it? So it's interesting. Now, for someone who might be listening to this show who said, oh, I just love photography, this sounds like something that is so interesting, and I know it's a passion for you. You absolutely, thoroughly enjoy it. This book is just absolutely magnificent. What would you say to someone that might want to explore this? Because your book, San Juan Islands and Beyond, this is a story of your journey and the photographs that you've acquired here in the Pacific Northwest. But what would you say to someone that's on the East Coast or living in Europe or any place in the world, if they would really like to get into it, what would you recommend that they do?
Well, I would recommend that they just get out there and be out in whatever their passion is. If their passion is wildlife, be out there with the wildlife. Keep snapping. The beauty of digital photography is that you can just keep snapping away 1,000 pictures and then go back and look at them later and delete 900 of them. Mm-hmm. But my suggestion is to get out there. Many people I find feel intimidated, like, oh, I'm not good enough. I don't think I can do this. I don't know what I'm looking for. Yes, you do. We're looking for your point of view. Everybody has a different point of view. And I would encourage everyone to just be out there where you want to take the pictures. If you love the ocean, be out on the ocean. If you love the mountains, be out on the mountains. And bring your camera and just keep snapping and keep looking, because your point of view, if you look straight ahead, you see something. And then you turn your head 90 degrees and you're in a completely different space, completely. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if you take that picture 90 degrees and then you take your picture and look forward, take that picture, and you look at the photograph, you're in two completely different places. So always look up, down, all around, and keep snapping.
Well, your book is absolutely gorgeous, and it's very important for my listeners to know that a large portion of the sales of the book you donate to local outreach programs and animal rescue organizations, such as the Whale Museum, NOAA, the ASPCA, the Red Cross Disaster Relief, World Wildlife Fund, the PCC Farmland Trust, Cascade Animal Shelter, and other local animal shelters. So this is more than just taking photographs for you. One, you are exercising your creative skills in a wonderful, wonderful way. You tell a story with your photographs, which I think is terrific. And then also, you really honor and respect the environment that you're living in and are very supportive of those groups that you've gotten to know. And I just think that if those of you listening know of a young person that loves wildlife or anyone that really appreciates the beauty of Mother Nature, the book San Juan Islands and Beyond, the orca whales are just incredible. And you have all of this sunset, you have some photos on the herons, of course the orcas, as I've mentioned, and so much more. Not only does it show the Pacific Northwest in a magnificent way, but it also shows the feeling of the photographer for the subject matter that she has chosen to explore. And this is something, what is your website that people can go to, Karen, so that they can see more of your work?
They can go to photos, PHOTOS, happen, HAPPEN, .com. If they want to see a preview of the book and kind of flip through some pages, it's published by Her Majesty Press, .com.
Mm-hmm.
HERMAJESTY, Press,
right.
.com.
So you've got two places you can go to see some absolutely magnificent photography. Photo Snapper.
Photos happen.
Yeah. Photos happen. Excuse me. I couldn't read my writing. Photoshappen.com. And also go to HerMajestyPress.com. And you'll be able to see all of her work. And it's just a feast for the eyes. I think you'll really enjoy it. Karen King, thank you very much for being my guest today. I wish you nothing but the best as far your work goes. And I look forward to your next book that you're going to be putting up. Be sure you send me a copy.
I will. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. Our next guest is going to be Eliezer Sobel, Blue Sky, White Clouds. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and I know that there are some of you calling in, but we've got a guest call in at a quarter to the hour, and we'll take it from there. My guest today is Eliezer Sobel. Now, this book that he's put out, Blue Sky, White Clouds, is something that when I heard about it, I was intrigued. And this is a book that Eliezer decided he wanted to put out because he had gone through a very personal experience of his own with a member of his family that had contracted Alzheimer's. And I want to welcome Eliezer Sobel to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Donna. My name is Eliezer, but nobody can say it, so don't worry.
Eliezer. Oh, well, yeah. Thank you for correcting me.
That's okay. I had a very unusual experience. My mother, you know, who's had Alzheimer's for over 10 years, lost gradually all of her ordinary language and communication skills to the point where obviously she couldn't read books and then newspapers, then paragraphs, then even sentences. And then she seemed to lose all words and made up her own language. And even today, she's still physically alive and well. She will engage in a long conversation with people, with me, with you, in words you would never recognize, such as, the Mingelmann is verliebter Nosti today? Yes, Mom. Oh, you too? I didn't Mingelmann tampon. And she'll talk like this, and I just, you know, assumed her language was gone, but her ability to connect remained, which was actually all I needed, really, from my mom was to feel the connection. I didn't care about the content so much. But one day, just by accident, I happened to walk into the living room, and she was flipping through a magazine looking at the pictures, and I heard her reading the headlines that were the words in big print. She was reading them aloud in English. Mm-hmm. And it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I go, oh, my God, my mom still can read. It's just that she can only read individual words or 2 to 3 word phrases. So I figured I'll just go get her a book written for people like her. And I ran out to Barnes & Noble and searched and searched. And there wasn't a single book written for a dementia patient. So I went on Amazon and I had the same result. I couldn't find any books. And children's books weren't quite what I was looking for because most of them are cartoonish. They're animated illustrations. They involve creatures and monsters. They often even have stories. And my mom can't follow a story. She can't even remember a whole sentence. So I realized there was this missing product for millions of dementia patients and people with memory loss. No one had written any books for her, so I did.
Now, one of the things I wanted to mention is that you have a particular program called the Five Rhythms Movement Practice. What is this related to?
Well, my teacher, who just passed away about a month ago, October 22nd, Gabrielle Roth, is actually a world-known spiritual teacher who used movement as a meditation, and she taught this practice where you move your body through five very distinct rhythms as a way to arriving at a quiet, still place inside, similar to meditation, but more geared to people who don't want to sit on a cushion endlessly for hours and rather be physical and use their bodies, mm-hmm. but to aim for the same result.
Now, I want to ask you a question, because this book that you have put together, Blue Sky, White Clouds, you have these lovely photographs. The first one in the book shows a little tiny yellow bird in somebody's hand, and it looks like a man's hand, and he's gently petting the bird. And it has, you know, just a few words, a tiny yellow bird. Now, when you put this book together, did you do some testing with your mom to see if she responded to the visual? And is there a potential of any research regarding this that maybe there could be a activation in the brain because of this process that would bring a cognitive level to an Alzheimer's patient?
You know, Donna, it really depends on where someone is in their dementia process. There are people, obviously, who can still read or understand things. Then there's people like my mom who could only read a few words and without much comprehension. And then there's people, and actually, since it takes a while for a book to come out, in the year that it took for me to get the book out, my mom actually lost her ability even to read words. But there had been a five-year period where she would have really enjoyed this book, and she did help me pick the cover. I had a few choices, and she gravitated to the one that I chose. And yes, one of the endorsements on the back of the book is from one of the leading Alzheimer's researchers in the world, and he wrote that something like this, depending where the person is, can indeed stimulate reminiscence or stimulate a part of the brain or memories from childhood and mostly stimulate conversation with a caregiver to the extent that someone is still able to converse. But like I said, every Alzheimer's or dementia patient or memory loss person, because there's all different kinds of memory loss, they will all relate to this in a different way, but nearly all of them across the board can usually enjoy and respond to at least the photographs, and then some of them can also read the captions, which are small, you know, 2 to 3 words in big print, and some of them can still understand the captions and connect it to the picture. It's a huge spectrum. One of the things I've discovered from friends is that they are also finding uses for the book I never thought of. One friend is a therapist, and she's using it with normal adult therapy patients who have no dementia, but the pictures are enabling them to tap into feelings that they couldn't otherwise articulate. And then another friend is using it with their preschool 2-year-olds because, in a sense, it is like a children's picture book, except it's for adults. So there are multiple uses for it, even though my intention was for people like my mom.
Now, you have been a hospital chaplain, so this is something that has been a very significant part of your life. You've also done a lot of volunteer work in a nursing home. You've been involved in music, and you've been involved in children's theater. And I think that this is all quite a compliment to what you have been able to bring out. And how old is your mom?
She is 89, still living at home and being cared for full-time by my 89-year-old dad, who does all the shopping and cooking and hiring of aides to help him. And he's running the show still.
Amazing.
It is amazing. They've been married 67 years.
Incredible. Well, I know that I was visiting with some friends yesterday, and their 95-year-old mother is beginning to experience a level of dementia that he had not had exposure to, you know, relative to her. She's just been incredibly together up until about this time. And they've seen little signs, but she's pretty active. She does crossword puzzles and things like this. And I know how important it is to keep those cognitive skills going because the brain is so amazing. But as you said, there's many different levels. And this book is a size that is very good, let's say, for little hands, like for a child's hands. But when you go to the other end of the age spectrum, many times people, when they're older, their fingers don't work so well, and they don't have a lot of strength in their hands. So this book is a nice size for them to maybe put on their lap or have on the table, and it's easy for them to manage. And your description of it being like a children's book, I think, is very important. Blue sky, white clouds, and this is for memory-challenged adults. Are you going to be doing another book like this? What are you doing relative to this? Are you taking this to nursing homes so that people have a chance to see what you've got here?
Well, I'm doing my very best to learn the art of PR, so I appreciate being on your show because I would like to reach the nursing home community, which is vast, because I think there should be a copy of this book in every memory unit in the country. So I'm trying to figure out how to reach, you know, the corporate headquarters of these nursing home chains. It's a learning process for me. I'm not a salesman. I'm just the son of a mother. You know, and I did want to mention that imagine this being a book that someone would read with their caregiver, because I think it will provide moments of real tenderness and connection and conversing and sharing, as opposed to what I've noticed many caregivers who are completely burned out. And I understand that, you know, they often just put their loved one in front of a television and hope that they'll fall asleep so they can get a moment of respite. But and that's understandable. But, you know, the patient needs some things to do to engage them, and they have more brain power, as you said, than we realize. And there aren't many activities out there. If you go searching for Alzheimer's books, they're all geared toward the caregiver. None of them that I could find are geared to the patient.
Well, I think your book goes very strongly in that direction. It is absolutely lovely. And for those of you that might find a member of your family, or if you have a friend that maybe is experiencing this, why not consider this as a gift that you could give to them that they can share with that loved one? And my goodness, as generations are living longer and longer and longer, I don't know of anyone whose life is not going to be touched in some way by someone, someplace, who will tell you of someone in their family that's going through these memory shifts and changes. BlueSkyWhiteClouds.com is the website I'd encourage you to check out, because I think that Mr. Sobel has gone a long way in discovering something that not many people are really aware of. And remember, the brain is amazing. They're finding more and more now that there are things that can be done that can actually enhance memory abilities on so many levels. And I mean that most sincerely. It's not hype, but it's a process. And this book goes a long way to perhaps, as he said with his own mother, enabling them to maybe keep that cognitive function a little bit longer. If not, maybe enabling them to make a shift or maybe turn things around to a degree where they can be more a part of the world.
One last quick thing. Even if none of that were true, it can provide just some joyous, warm moments with your loved one who you thought was out of reach. Even if it doesn't, you know, help their memory, it can just help the connection. And I think connection is very important.
I agree. Thank you so much for being with me, Mr. Sobel. I'm just delighted that you were able to take time out of your busy schedule. And for those of you listening, check out BlueSkyWhiteClouds.com. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. If you'd like to call in and chat, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. We are going to be talking about cabin fever tomorrow with William Sullivan. Yes. What would it be like to live out in the woods, be in a cabin? Well, William is going to be sharing that down-to-earth perspective with us tomorrow. Empowering yourself, we are going to be talking with Blanca De La Rosa. This is a career woman, and boy, does she have an attitude, a good attitude. So, gals, you want to listen up, guys, too, because the world definitely is changing in the commercial aspect. And, of course, we have Thanksgiving coming up this week. There's going to be a Best of Donna because I'm going to be enjoying my holiday with friends and loved ones, as you are. And then on Friday, we are going to be traveling into the world of Afghanistan. My guest, Atta Arganhanawal, is a man that has written, well, it's an incredible book about a part of the world that we only have a tiny, tiny perception about. Lost Decency is the title of this book, about a people that this man said, people need to know more about my homeland and what it really is. It's an incredible story. So we've got that lined up for this week. And oh my goodness, the Donna Sebo Show, there are so many different people, so many fine people on this planet that are doing some pretty special things. So just know you can check it out. There's always show information here at the station, and also you can go in and peruse my newsletter. You'll find the postings of the authors and their books. But if you want to be a bit of a write-up, go in to the site here at bbsradio.com, and you'll find the show information there. It's a brief description, but it gives you a thumbnail sketch of who's coming up. Okay, I promised you this recipe, and of course, I know the Thanksgiving holiday is coming up real fast. And maybe you're sort of thinking, gee, I wonder what I'm going to fix. Many people are going to have the traditional turkey, mashed potatoes, green beans, etc. But a girlfriend and I were discussing this, and she said, you know what? I really have an attitude anymore. I just don't like fixing a huge turkey. She said, I just have all of this energy that goes into carving the silly bird and getting it ready for the table and all of this. So she said, I really don't like being bothered with that anymore. And I have a recipe that I'm going to share with you perhaps tomorrow about an apple brined turkey breast, which is great. But I wanted to share something with you, and again, it's because I'm in the Pacific Northwest. It is salmon. Salmon makes a wonderful, wonderful dish. And if you're a person, if you're going to be having turkey as part of your traditional banquet, then I would say you might want to consider having this in addition, because salmon is something that really gives a phenomenal, phenomenal look to a beautiful table, which I think is very important when you have a holiday like this and you have friends and family over and you're celebrating it, or even if you're just doing it for yourself and a very significant other person. But this is for about six people, and you can marinate and bake your salmon in one pan. How easy is that? Oh, my goodness. The simpler, the better. If you're like me and you got so many things going on, you don't want any more to hassle with than necessary. Now, what you're going to need is about 6 fillets, and you're going to have, it's about 6 ounces, and this recipe could be cut in half if you wanted it to be that way. So remember, you can always adapt it. You could even double it if you're going to have a bigger group. 6 fillets of salmon, about 6 ounces each. You're going to need 1 tomato peeled, seeded, and diced. You're going to need 4 ounces of yellow onion, and that's to be sliced. 2 ounces of carrots. You want to slice those thinly. 1 lemon, and you want to slice that into rounds. 2 cloves of garlic. You want to slice that too. 8 ounces of vegetable broth. And if you don't like vegetable broth, I'd say use a chicken broth to go with the salmon. It depends on what your desire is. 2 ounces of olive oil, 2 ounces of red wine vinegar, 2 ounces of dry red wine. Remember, your wine always, if it doesn't taste good to you when you sip it, you don't want to use it in cooking. You want to use in cooking a wine that tastes good to your palate. That's very important because it definitely has an impact on the food. You need 2 bay leaves, 3 fresh thyme sprigs, 4 fresh tarragon leaves, and of course a little bit of salt and pepper. Now this is how simple it is. You're going to need an oven-proof glass pan. You want to put your 6 salmon fillets in this glass pan, and you want to mix all of these ingredients, everything that I mentioned to you, the tomato, the onion, carrots, lemon, all the way to the tarragon leaves. You want to mix that all together in one little bowl, and then pour it over your salmon. And you can marinate it for an hour in the refrigerator prior to cooking it. And you want that pan, you want to cover your salmon loosely with a piece of foil, and you want to, when the time comes to cook it, you're only going to cook it for 15 minutes at 350 degrees. So your oven obviously has to be preheated. And when it's done, put it on the plate that you want it served on, strain your liquid from the baking pan, and then you want to reduce it to less than a cup using a whisk, and you adjust your seasoning and pour it over your salmon. That is so simple and so good. And if you're wanting something, a nice salad, freshly baked bread, you know, nice preserves, and a luscious dessert, oh my goodness, that I think would be the crowning glory to this. It is incredible. Food is supposed to be fun, and I think variety is absolutely great. And of course, here in the Pacific Northwest, salmon is really a very, very special part of our lives. I know we're just about out of time here, but I thought I would just share a thought before we close out today. This is Thanksgiving week, and I don't know what, you know, what better opportunity to really be mindfully present about being grateful. But I thought I would share a thought with you. Somebody is always doing what somebody else said couldn't be done. Now think about those words. Somebody is always doing what somebody else said could not be done. The evolution of history, the evolution of the human being, goes through some fascinating aspects when you study history. You can either move forward because there's an openness to change, or you can go backwards because of ignorance, fear, and superstition, and old paradigms, those patterns not being released comfortably. But whenever someone says it's not possible for you to do something, raise your own glass ceiling, because you may surprise everybody by being able to accomplish something they never thought was possible. Look at my two guests today. One is a photographer. She started really working with her photography as a hobby in 1989. It has opened up a whole world for her. She's developed all kinds of associations. My second guest, Mr. Solomon. Well, he did something that he found nobody else had done, develop a book for the elderly. All of these patterns are very unique to the individual. And they said, I'm going to do this. And by being willing to expand themselves, their attitudes, dropping old paradigms of belief, evolving the aspect of curiosity, tapping into that part of themselves that said, I can do something that can make a difference in life. That is phenomenal. So when you find yourself challenged, if someone says, oh, at your age, you can't do anything, whether you're 10, 3, or 95, there's no end to the possibility. And that's what we need to remember. We need to ask ourselves what kind of a glass ceiling we have in our own lives, and what can we do to raise that glass ceiling, or actually just shoot it with a bazooka and get it out of the way. It takes a willingness to explore. There's no such thing as a straight line in life. I've never known anybody who's successful in their own right that has ever had that experience. So remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget that. Don't ever turn that over to anybody else. You belong to you. Have fun. Explore yourself. I think you might find you're more interesting than you ever imagined. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. And have a marvelous day. Enjoy new adventures. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.